Kent Online News.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast. Nicola Everett.
Hello, hope you're okay. On Thursday, April the 30th, thanks ever so much for downloading today's podcast. Coming up, a woman's been ordered to repaint her blue house.
There were a couple of other houses painted blue at the time, and I thought that was a lovely colour. It was like a Matisse blue, you know. And I just chose that because I thought it was nice.
How waste plastic is being turned into fuel in Kent?
The plastics which are problematic for the mechanical recycling today are the ones actually used in food packaging, carrier bags, all those types of loose, light plastics. They just simply can't be processed in traditional mechanical recycling facilities like a plastic bottle can.
And Gillingham's Sam Vokes chats about his decision to retire.
For me personally, to be involved with a new group, a new squad, and play for a new club, a great club like Gillingham, I've enjoyed it. But when you get to my age, life decisions and family decisions are just as important as football.
But first, on today's episode, an investigation found a knife attack might have been prevented if a man had received better mental health care in Kent. A 31-year-old stabbed another man in his 30s just a month after being discharged from the care of the Kent and Medway NHS Social Care Partnership Trust in 2020. He was later diagnosed with schizophrenia and detained under the Mental Health Act. Well, an ombudsman has found a series of failings by the trust in the 12 months leading up to the stabbing. Rebecca Hilson-Ruth is the Chief Executive Officer of the Ombudsman. She's been speaking to Lucy.
This is a story about a patient and his family and a passerby who were essentially let down by failings in mental health care and discharge. We're talking about a man in his 30s who was struggling with and exhibiting problems with his mental health for about a year from October 2019. A couple of times he created a disturbance, was tearing up furniture, was arrested, hospitalised and released. He was discharged back into the community in June 2020. Into community mental health services. And from then until October that year, he had no in-person contact, no crisis plan, no risk assessment, no change to his medication when they knew he wasn't actually taking his pills and was non-compliant. He just received 3 phone calls. And then in October, he was discharged completely. And a month later, he went on to attack a young man who fortunately survived, after which he was diagnosed with schizophrenia.
So this attack was on a complete stranger, and you said luckily he survived. I mean, did he suffer any kind of life-altering injuries or was it minor?
As far as I'm aware, he's made a recovery. But of course, we do know that that doesn't always happen. We know from the killings in Nottingham, we've seen, you know, families torn apart, futures destroyed. And there are clear parallels with what happened there in terms of young men in their 30s, diagnosis of schizophrenia, attack on innocent passers-by, and critically, the families not involved. Because obviously families are in a position to have a very good idea of what's going on when people are struggling. And what we're asking for is mental health services to involve them more in their planning. We know that they're very stretched. We know there's a huge amount of pressure on resource, but this is not really about resource. It's about proper planning, proper continuity, proper conversations, proper communication to make sure that the care that's provided is effective.
And of course, this happened back in 2020. Has the trust improved at all since then and kind of addressed these issues that are highlighted in the report?
We've asked the trust to develop an action plan and make amendments, improvements to its service to ensure that other people won't have to experience the same failings. We'll be going back to look at what they've put in place. It's very important. Most people who come to us with a complaint are motivated by the idea that other people won't go through, won't have to experience the same service failure. But sadly, we do see these issues across the country. And that's why we've published this case, because we think it's really important that mental health services are aware of the commonality of those failings and the impact on families and on members of the community.
The patient's mother had repeatedly raised concerns about her son's deteriorating condition and the risks he posed. She asked to remain anonymous, so we've disguised her voice.
I needed people to recognise, you know, what had happened and see it in writing. That's what I've been fighting for. That's what I fought for years. As much as it was so hard, you know, like, I needed that to help me, like, move on a bit, if that makes sense.
You are recognised hugely throughout the report for what you did. If you don't mind us going back to 2020, how difficult a time was that for you when you were trying to liaise with authorities to express your concerns?
I am a really, really tough person. Like, I'm the strength of my family. Like, I'm no nonsense. But what they did and how they treated me and failed my son and put a fear in me is with me forever. Like, it can never, they've changed me. I'm a changed person. The battle was absolutely horrendous, disgusting, the way they treated me. I mean, I'm phoning them, I'm telling them, like, there's danger and everything, and they brushed me off. They didn't care.
You were literally telling them, my son is going to do something bad. And I believe from what the Ombudsman report says, they were like, phone the police.
Yeah, I phoned his care coordinator, I phoned the crisis team, and they were saying, you'll have to just phone the police. And I'm saying, I've already done that. I phoned them. They can't help unless he commits a crime, and I don't want him to commit a crime. And they're saying, well, you'll have to phone them back and say it again. That was what I got. And when I spoke to his care coordinator, like, I'd left the house by then, and I'm telling her, I've had to leave the house. Like, I'm scared now. He's not him anymore. And she said, has he hit you? And I said, like, no. She went, why are you scared then? You know, that was the response. That conversation I will never, ever forget.
And how, after what happened, I mean, is there any way you can describe how you felt for the victim, the man who was attacked?
I was heartbroken, and my son is still heartbroken. My son is not a violent person. You know, like, he didn't get into fights. He wasn't like that. And even now, he struggles to cope with what happened, you know, because it's just not him. He has never been violent, ever. And he struggles every day knowing what he's done.
The trust is now known as the Kent and Medway Mental Health NHS Trust, and a spokesperson has issued this statement. It says, this was a deeply serious and complex case, and we recognise the distress experienced by the family. Concerns raised in 2021 were fully investigated, including through close engagement with the Parliamentary and Health Service Ombudsman, and we have been open and transparent throughout that process. We apologise for where care and support did not meet expected standards and have taken action to strengthen community mental health services in line with the National Community Mental Health Framework.
Kent Online News.
Other top stories today, and three teenagers who killed a man on a beach on Sheppey are due to be sentenced later. Alexander Cashford met one of the group by chance in an arcade in Laysdown last August. 2 days later, the 49-year-old was chased down and attacked. A boy and girl were found guilty of manslaughter in February following a trial. Another boy had already admitted the same charge. A lorry driver who lured a teenage girl into his cab in Greenhithe before attacking her has been jailed. It happened in August 2023, and CCTV traced the HGV to Turkey. Now, the suspect was eventually identified after being arrested for another offence and his DNA uploaded to a database. 35-year-old Samet Duman from St Hilda's Way in Gravesend has been sentenced to 8 years and 8 months in prison. This is the moment he was arrested after getting off a plane.
Pass me that. So listen, okay? Times 21:57, you're under arrest on suspicion of rape. Okay? Of rape. So you do not have to say anything, but it may harm the defence to not mention when questioned. Something which will later rely on court. Anything you do say may be given evidence.
Pardon?
I am not.
Okay.
You don't like me. Any other luggage?
Three women involved in running brothels, including four in Kent, have walked free from court. The 48, 50 and 56-year-olds directed, controlled and took money from sites, including on Fort Pitt Street in Chatham, Windsor Court in Gillingham and two sites in Maidstone. They were convicted last year following a trial. Two were given jail terms but released due to time already served. Another was given a conditional discharge. A Kent police officer is due to go on trial accused of corruption, stalking and damaging property. James Logie has been with the force since 2022 after serving with the Met for 12 years. The 36-year-old from Rochester is alleged to have committed offences between January and March this year. The case will be transferred to either Sussex or Surrey.
Kent Online reports.
Police are investigating after metal thieves stole a bell from a chapel at Faversham Cemetery. They climbed onto the roof of the building on Love Lane to reach the steeple, damaging some of the tiles in the process. It's thought to have happened at the end of March, and anyone with information is being urged to come forward. A barrister who turned up to court drunk has been ordered to pay a £1,000 fine. James Hankinson had to be taken to hospital after collapsing at Maidstone Combined Court in March last year. He's expressed deep regret and says he's now stopped drinking. Victims are having to wait 770 days for their cases to be heard at Crown Court in Kent, according to new figures. Analysis of data by the Law Society has also found the number of open cases in Maidstone and Canterbury has more than doubled, from 1,451 in 2016 to more than 3,000 last year. However, bosses say things are now moving in the right direction, with trials being moved to Southwark and Woolwich. Animal rights campaigners are due to stage a protest in Canterbury today. They're unhappy about plans to run horse-drawn carriage rides through the city. It's something that doesn't actually require a licence from the council, but the demo is due to happen outside the Guildhall ahead of a meeting of the authority. Now, next today, a woman's been ordered to repaint her home after being told the current bright blue shade is unsympathetic with the conservation area in Deal. She's spent more than £3,000 having the property in West Street decorated, but has now received a letter from the council. Mary Kenny has been speaking to our reporter, Louis Walker.
We were first living in Middle Street, and that was lovely. And of course, I was very aware in Middle Street that there were very strict regulations. And Middle Street is lovely, but it's the kind of property that needs a lot of maintenance. Then we moved to St. George's Road. My husband had a stroke and needed a lot of care, and that house wasn't really suitable, so we moved here in 2013, because we were able to put a bed downstairs, you know, for him, and he died in 2015. Yeah, so we were in London before that, been in Deal for, 28 years, yeah.
As you kind of said, you know, these kinds of properties, you know, there's always some form of maintenance that needs doing. So kind of how long was kind of the idea floated about, you know, of giving the property a fresh coat of paint?
Well, really, I mean, I knew a good 6 or 7 years. I can't remember really, really, but I became aware that it just needed freshening up. And so in 2023, I got some money together, and there were a couple of other houses painted blue at the time, and I thought that was a lovely colour. It was like a Matisse blue, you know. And I just chose that because I thought it was nice, and I had no idea. I think the conservation area has been gradually extended, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Rather quietly. And so sometime after that, after it was painted, there was a complaint lodged by an anonymous neighbour. And I suppose since then I've been sort of in communication with Dover District Council, saying, you know, that I'd like to appeal against this. But they didn't actually serve this enforcement until this month. So I suppose they have, to be fair, I suppose they have waited to actually serve the enforcement notice, haven't they?
You've got the property painted this colour because it's something you liked, and you know it's livened the property up. Yeah. It looks lovely, but now you're told it's inappropriate. Really.
Yes.
Just kind of how does that kind of make you feel? Really, that it's you know it's.
Well, I mean, I'm obviously very worried because it's always very worrying. I'm a little old lady of 82, you know, and I've got all kinds of health, you know, arthritis and what have you. And so it's very worrying to have to confront a problem, a house problem like this. And I hope I'm a reasonably law-abiding citizen. So you don't like to be on the wrong side of, you know, things. But I do feel, you know, that I am owed an explanation as to why, you know.
You can see pictures of the home at Kent Online and maybe add a comment by letting us know what you think. Well, this is what the enforcement notice adds. It says the painting of the exterior has, due to its inappropriate colour, resulted in a visually unsympathetic development. The inappropriate colour results in the building appearing visually dominant in the street scene, detracting from the visual harmony of the grouping of historic buildings. The painting of the dwelling therefore fails to preserve or enhance the conservation area and results in significant harm.
Kent Online reports.
A Kent hospital has issued a water safety notice after an issue with supply in some parts of the building. Bosses at Darren Valley are urging people not to drink from the taps or use the water for washing in certain areas. It's thought to be an internal problem which is not affecting nearby homes. A cocktail bar on Sheppey that's reopened following a revamp has applied to be able to play music inside and in the garden. The Player on Minster Lees closed in January due to rising costs but has been taken over by new management. They say the application isn't about turning the site into a music venue. It'll be discussed by a licensing panel next month. A really interesting story next on the podcast, and a pilot facility has been set up in Kent to turn waste plastic into sustainable aviation fuel. Clean Planet Technologies are researching ways of using materials that can't be recycled to power planes in a more environmentally friendly way. They've opened a site at the Discovery Park in Sandwich and are using a process that turns the plastic into a liquid which can then be purified and reused. Naila Mohammed from our colleagues at KMTV has been chatting to Bertie Stevens, who's the CEO of Clean Planet Group.
The UK government is one of the world leading policymakers in regards to decarbonising aviation and also road transport as well. So there's something called the RTFO and SAF mandate, and that's introduced by the government to make sure that we have new sustainable ways of reducing the carbon emissions of fossil fuels in areas where you can't do it otherwise. So, for example, in your household car, there's electric cars, and that's great. But in big lorries or in planes, there's no real way to decarbonize that because you need the heavy fuels. So the SAF mandate says that on 2025, we had to have supplied 2% of all aviation fuel as sustainable aviation fuel. And by 2030, that's 10%. Now, aviation fuel can be produced in a number of different ways. You can do it from used cooking oils, you can do it from crops, but there's no sustainable way to scale that at the scale that we need to produce that much aviation fuel for the industry. So the mandate looks at different feedstocks. So cooking oil is one feedstock, plants is one feedstock, and waste plastics is now another feedstock as well.
Is it feasible that we'll be able to reach that new 10% by 2030?
It's a challenge to meet that 10% by 2030, but that's why the UK government are doing so much to support producers like ourselves. There's great incentives to help research and develop new technology. For example, Clean Planet Technologies recently won a grant from the UK SAF Clearinghouse, which is funded by the Department of Transport, to support the testing of the fuels that we produce out of this facility. So the UK government is really pushing it, which is fantastic, and it allows us to generate the sustainable fuels and supply it then to the market later.
And how much waste plastic will produce how much SAF?
It's quite nice, actually, on the conversion, because around 100 tonnes of waste plastic will produce around 90 tonnes of aviation fuel. So you lose very little. And actually, what you do lose in that 10 tonnes is mostly gas. And you can use that gas, which the system gives off, to power the systems itself. So you then have a circular way of powering the machinery, which means the actual energy intensity is a lot lower.
I was also quite curious, because this is about waste plastic. Mm-hmm. Can you talk to me a bit about what kind of plastic you can use and which ones you can't use?
So what people don't realise when they put their plastic into their household bins is that over 80% of it will never be recycled. The plastics which are problematic for the mechanical recycling today are the ones actually used in food packaging, carrier bags, films, all those types of loose, light plastics. They just simply can't be processed in traditional mechanical recycling facilities like a plastic bottle can. So the UK mandate says that we have to use the plastics that can't otherwise be recycled. So what's really nice about that policy is that we're not challenging the current recycling system, we're complementing it by taking the 80% of plastics that we can't otherwise recycle.
A 102-acre site in Rootham is going to be turned into a vital habitat for wildlife. It's currently degraded farmland, but has been brought by a company which sets up so-called habitat banks. They're designed to offset the impact of housing developments. Rootham Hill Nature Reserve will eventually have wildflower meadows, orchards and wildlife corridors. And one of Kent's biggest winemakers has returned a profit. Chapel Down have reported a 22% rise in sales for last year, with revenues of £19.4 million. It's after the company made a loss in 2024. Bosses say they're focused on delivering strong growth.
Kent Online Sport.
Football now, and Chatham Town's promotion hopes are over for another season. They were beaten by Billericay Town in their Isthmian Premier Division playoff semi-final last night. Despite fighting back from 3-0 down, the game ended 3-2. Elsewhere, Gillingham striker Sam Vokes has spoken about his decision to retire. The 36-year-old signed for the Gills last summer and has scored three times in 35 appearances. He's been telling the club he's looking forward to spending more time with his wife and children.
It's been a strange 48 hours. Something I've been talking to my wife and my family about for a little while. Decided to retire, mate, and call it a day on my football career. It's, as I said, it's a strange decision to make, because something I've always known, something I've always loved. And growing up, it's all you want to do is play football. And I was fortunate enough to have, 20 years or so at this level playing.
When did you decide for sure? Not asking for a specific date, but was there a moment or a game or maybe a conversation where you thought, you know what, that now's the right time?
Yeah, not specifically as such. I think, towards the end of last season, when I was at Wickham, I picked up a couple of injuries. Obviously, you'll see I wear a hand thing at the minute. So I broke my arm last game of last season. And at Wickham, I was offered a coaching role there, but still had an itch to play, really. And when Gareth called last summer, it was something I wanted to do. I know this is a great club. I played here a few times, and I wanted to be part of something special. Looking back on this season, it's been a frustrating one. I can't hide away from that, but for me personally, to be involved with a new group, a new squad, and play for a new club, a great club like Gillingham, I've enjoyed it. But I think that when you get to my age, life decisions and family decisions are just as important as football. So I've enjoyed a good time, but I think now is about the right time. It feels about the right time to do it.
The Gills' final game of the season takes place on Saturday. On to cricket now, and the England head coach has insisted Tammy Beaumont's international career isn't over. Charlotte Edwards has been speaking after the batter was left out of the squad for the T20 World Cup this summer. The 35-year-old from Dover was also overlooked for next month's one-day international series against New Zealand. And a Kent man has completed 7 marathons in 7 days to raise money for a local community centre. Paul Kingdon finished off the challenge with an additional 24-hour run all the way from Maidstone to Greatstone. He's raised more than £2,700 for the Romney Marsh Community Hub. An incredible effort. Well, that's all from us for today. Thanks ever so much for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us on socials. Plus, you can get details on the top stories direct to your email each morning via the briefing. To sign up to that, just head to kentonline.co.uk. And whilst you're on the website, you can sign up to Kent Online Premium as well. That gives you access to content with fewer ads and exclusive stories. And whilst on the website today, don't forget to check out the latest Eat My Words food review.
News you can trust.
This is the Kent Online Podcast.